Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2013. Lecture 17, delivered on March 26, 2013. The title of this lecture is The Marginal Cost of Capital.
Today, the marginal cost of capital. This is a working class where I'm going to show you the steps in how to accomplish a goal. We'll walk through it together, and you will master this skill. And once you have done it for this worksheet that you all have working together, then I will post a problem just like this online tomorrow, and there will be a quiz where you'll fill in the numbers and give the answers and all that kind of stuff. And then one of these walls will be on the exam two. So once you get the hang of this, you're going to find that it's actually pretty easy. It's just step, step, step. Don't ask why if you don't understand it. It'll make sense as time goes on. Essentially, what I'm showing you here is an alternative to some of the more standardized or the early procedures for deciding whether a project is a go or a no-go. Let me explain. You see, at the beginning of a year, I don't know if you've actually ever been told this or not. Well, it's actually for the next year. There are various stages of how a budget is made for a company. It's actually, you'll probably know what's happening regardless of where you are in a company, because there will be this period of time when these budgets are being put together. One of them is the cash budget. And it's basically your projection of the revenues for the next year and the projection of the costs. And okay, how much money are we going to have to work with? The next, that's one budget. And then there's another team that puts together a more detailed budget, asking, okay, we now know the sources and the uses of the cash, the incomes and the outflows. Okay, how does that fit into our larger scheme of the projects that we're going to have under consideration for next year? Okay, obviously we got cash, we're going to project some kind of net income, or the finance equivalent of it, free cash flow. Okay, we got that money. We know that's going to be there. How is that going to fit in with how much money we need for our operations? Understanding, of course, that we have to work in this thing called the optimal capital structure. We can't just say, well, we'll get some cash from inside, from our sales, then we'll borrow some money. It doesn't work that way. We have to say, what is that? We know where our, and I'm graphing a percent debt in our total capital structure. The other part would be the percent equity. We know that if all we did was pure equity, we would pay the cost of equity. Well, that's awfully high. Debt, if we borrow money, it's tax deductible, the interest is, and it's also safer, so we're paying a lower rate all over the place. So as we add some debt to our capital structure and not purely finance everything through equity, our costs will go down. But they won't keep going down to 100% where we pay the cost of debt after taxes, because at some point we're going to borrow so much money that the banks are going to start telling us, ah, we're going to have to start charging you out the butt. So if we went to 100% borrowing for all of our financing needs, well, that wouldn't be cheap either. So we've worked out this place which is called our optimal capital structure. some percentage debt, some percentage equity that encompasses our total assets. Optimal capital structure, the OCS. Okay, now that comes from these I'm looking for someone who looks like he's hip and with it. Woman, have you seen the movie The Hobbit? Oh, geez, okay. Did you see Lord of the Rings? Do you even lift? You look like someone who would see the Lord of the Rings. Okay, you remember that? That was meant to be a compliment, for God's sake. Okay, you remember Gollum?
Yeah.
Oh, look at this, my precious. The ring. Wait a minute, it says made in China. Screw that. Okay. Where was I going? Oh, I know where I was going there. Okay. Now, Gollum lives underground, and that's why he's so weird and wrinkled and pasty, and his eyes bug, and he has hardly any hair. Okay, that's a finance person. We put him underground, and we have them figure out things like complex things like optimal capital structure. And we feed them once in a while, and we tell them that they could have the ring someday. Yes, we could let you up into the light. My precious, I could go to the light? Yes, you could. Okay. Well, let me get back to this. God, you guys get off track so easily. Okay. So there are these people who figure out what this bottoming out point is. And the rest of us who are more normal say, okay, we'll just take your word for it. We don't want to talk to you. You know, please don't use the company restrooms. There's a pit down in the basement you can use. Okay, so whatever it is. Let's say it's that optimal capital structure hits at 40% debt. And that would mean that it's 60% equity. That means that every dollar that we're going to use for investment in the company, new projects, whatever, 40% of that dollar, 40 cents, will have to come from debt, and 60% will have to come from equity. That's just how it is. No, it won't ever work out. $100, oh, we'll just pull out of the cash drawer. No, not for capital projects. We have to do it the right way. Because if we don't do it the right way every time, we're just going to slide right off that optimal capital structure. We won't feel a thing at first. It's like when you drink tequila. But as you do more and more of it, you begin to realize we're paying way too much for money. So every dollar of capital expenditures, 40 cents of it will come from the debt, from debt we borrow from the banks or from investors, and 60% will come from the equity. First, as far as debt goes, we're going to get the cheap debt that the bank offers us on the first tier. And eventually, we're going to have to buy more, use more expensive debt. The bank's going to hit us and say, we've got to pay more. In terms of equity, first we're going to burn through the cash that the company has made. That's the cheaper form. And then when we burn through all of the cash, that's owner's money, we will then go out and bring in new owners by selling more stock. So there will be actually these jumps in our cost of capital. First we'll have cheap debt, cheap equity. Then we'll use more costly debt and the cheap equity. And then finally, we'll be using costlier debt and costlier equity, the new equity. And that's how we'll stage ourselves through the project. And we will just keep funding new projects until we get to the point where the projects that we're accepting do not give us as much in return as the cost of the capital, the weighted average cost of the capital that we're using for them. And we can cut off a project, and that's why we have to do this beforehand, so that we don't end up having to cut off a project in midstream because it suddenly gets more expensive. We know beforehand, at least to the best of our ability, what's going to happen, and we can say we're going to take these projects, those projects that we had possible, we're not even going to bother with them. We're just going to go forward into the next year with the projects we have. So the first one with the cash budget. We know how much, we have a projection of how much money we're going to have. And we'll do it a little more simply than that in this problem here. And then we go to that operating budget. And that's where we say, all right, we're going to fill out the balance sheet, and we're going to look up there and see how much it's going to cost us to do all of this stuff that we say we're going to do. And that way, we walk into the next year, we've already made our negotiations with the bankers, we already know how much money is going to come out of free cash flow, and we've already talked to the underwriters about selling new stock. We've got it all already planned in front of us, sometimes a couple of years in advance. That's how it works in the world. And like I said, almost all of you, you'll be out there captains of industry, big, powerful people living the dream in a cubicle for the rest of your lives and all that. You will probably see these periods when the budgets are being built up. They might even come to you. We need some numbers from you. Or they might even tap you if you are unlucky enough to be where they see you. They might tap you to be on one of the teams that builds the capital budget, a cash budget or the operating budget. Fortunately, a lot of those is done by their internal accountants and a few finance majors that can't run fast enough to hide. Okay, but there you go. Okay, so again, every time we spend a dollar, we know for capital expenditures, we know that 40 cents of it will come from debt and 60% would come from equity in this one that I did here. Okay, so that's where we begin the story, and I will read this for the podcast. It's probably been a long time since someone has read to you like this. You know, think of this as like, you know, a bedtime story. And I'm your dad. No, I'm your uncle. Yeah, the funny one. No, Daddy, not that funny, Uncle. Okay. SecureTrax has a capital structure of 40% debt and 60% common equity. Notice there that I'm saying we're not going to talk about preferred stock. Be glad for that. Okay, the managers consider this mix to be optimal and want to maintain it in the future. Net income for the year just ended is $1.6 million. What that means right there is that that is our internally generated equity, the residual claim of the shareholders. Now, remember, there are two things that a company can do. Do you remember that from the first test? What are the two things that the company can do with the residual claim? Pay. What's that called? If they give the stockholders money. Dividends. And, or they can. Bingo. So we've got our $1.6 million, and now the company will have to decide how much of that goes. By the way, that was very good. Under pressure, you rule. Okay. We know that we got $1.6 million. Some of that we'll have to give to the shareholders as dividends to shut their pie holes up, and then the rest of it we're going to plow back into operations. So we've got the $1.6 million, which is the total residual claim, the equity. Now, Ed Simmons, the loan officer at the local bank, has set up the following schedule for SecureTrax borrowings. If the company borrows between zero and half a million, the bank will charge an 8% rate on the money. But if the company needs to borrow more than $500,000, then the bank is going to pop it to 12% on anything above that $500,000. So you'll see that there are two tiers on the debt. Less expensive debt comes in at 8% before tax. The more expensive debt comes in at 12% before tax. And like I said, in the real world, you can actually see a number of tiers in this. Excuse me. That chalupa was better than the first time. Okay. Do you see that? Okay. Now, there are 50,000 shares of common stock outstanding. Now, why would I be bothering with that? Well, hold on. Here we go. The firm's tax rate is 30%. Well, that didn't help. The market price per share of SecureTrax common stock is $40. They have declared and just paid a $4 per share dividend. Oh, so now we know in that what the company can do with its residual claim. It can either pay it as dividends or it can reinvest it. How much of that money, that $1.6 million is the company just going to throw back out the door to the shareholders so it can't reinvest it. What do you see there? Talk to me. Because it's $4 a share dividend, 50,000 shares, so that company has just basically written off, just said, throw it away, $200,000. It's not going to use that for reinvestment. That goes to the shareholders. And it's worth it because, like I said, it'll shut the shareholders up. They'll be happy. $4 a share dividend, they should be grateful for that. Okay, here we go now. The company's expected growth rate is 8%. You can see the pieces coming in here. Growth rate, G, tax rate, T. The formulas, you'll be able to just pick the numbers out of these words, which is how you should do all word problems. Get rid of the words as fast as possible and get the relevant numbers. The company's expected growth rate is 8%. The flotation cost for new common stock issued, those costs are set at 6%. Okay, they asked the senior financial analyst, Janice Schmidt, to recommend which of the following projects the firm should undertake. Because you are the newest member of her team and need the experience, she has passed this management request along to you. Okay, it would cost $600,000 to create the West Haven Training Center, and that would push in 12% rate of return. Decent. Okay, they can also build a Warsaw server hub. That would cost $1 million, and it would return 10%. The Belgrade Loss Prevention Office that they are considering would cost $800,000 and would pull in 8% return. And then the Oslo Countervailing Force Bunker at $1.5 million cost would bring in 15%. These are, by the way, twist numbers on an actual company. It's a private company, but it's their actual. This is like a tenth of what's really going on with a security company, cyber protection company. Okay, now down to the numbers. Monkey see, monkey do. Don't think. You're in business. You're not supposed to think. First of all, we've got the cost of cheaper debt would be KD1 after taxes is KD1 times 1 minus the tax rate. Just pull in the numbers. In this case, KD1. Tell me, what's KD1? What's your first cost of debt? For God's sake, don't use dope before you come to class. 8%, okay? 8% times, tell me, what's the tax rate? 1 minus? What is it? 0.30. I had to change these numbers a little bit because it got a little too realistic there when I first put these together. And so if you do that, you'll find that the first cost of debt is 5.6%. Is that right? You need to make sure you do this. And also, you're going to need something that's like a straight edge, okay? Something that's for later. So you might want to fold a piece of paper very daintily to get that. But right now, you're going to need a calculator. We've got our first answer, 5.6%. And by the way, this is just how it'll look on an exam, on the quiz. These are very standardized problems, and they're still done out there to this day. Oh. Cost of more expensive debt. That's KD2. After taxes. That would be the second tier of debt times 1 minus 0.30. Whoops, 1 minus T. Do the formula right. And that would be 12% times 1 minus 0.30. 12 times 0.7, 8.4% that should be. Is that right? Times 0.7, yeah, 8.4%. So now we know what debt is going to cost us. before it gets expensive and after it gets expensive. Okay, now we go to the equity. And remember the formulas for equity. The cost of the internally generated equity, the cost of our owners that are outstanding right now, is going to be the dividend one period out divided by the price of the stock now plus the growth rate of the company. Like that. That's K sub S. Sorry. K. D1 over P0, the price of the stock now. You notice something interesting about this? As your price of your stock goes up, this whole piece, the cost of internally generated equity, will go down. That's why we can't just pretend we don't care about the price of our stock as corporates. Because as the price of the stock goes down, the cost of equity goes up. That's why we care and we're pumping out press releases, we're keeping our investors happy, making sure that our disclosures are right, no scandals, because the higher the stock price is, the smaller D1 over P0 plus G is. That's why we care about the price of the stock. So now we're going to grind it. Okay, the dividend right now is $4 a share. But that's the dividend now. We have to grow it one period, one plus. What's the growth rate of this company, the company's stock? 8% times 1 plus 0.08. Because we remember that D1 is D0 times 1 plus G. Don't make this mistake. There's this temptation to just throw the dividend. You see the dividend, throw it in the numerator. Don't. Grow it. But watch out. I might say the dividend next period will be, in which case I've already given you D1. Don't let me bluff you with a curveball like that, okay? If I gave you the one that they're going to pay next period, I've already given you D1. But if I said they just paid a dividend, you have to grow it one period. So here we go. Now, in the denominator, what's the price of the stock right now? What did I say? Look up around. Tell me. $40. And then we have to plus that by the growth rate. Now, if you work that out, now I've found out that a few people make the mistake of using D0 and they get a problem wrong. The rest of the problem is just wrong from there. But more often, it seems to me, the problem is that they calculate, they get the formula written down right, but they do the calculation wrong. Just make sure you get what I get. So I'm going to grind through 4 times 1.08 divided by 40 plus 0.08. You should be able to just push it in like that, and you'll get that the cost of existing equity, the cost of the money that they have earned from their operations, is 18.8%. Ouch, damn. Okay. By the way, do you notice how expensive equity is compared to debt? It's actually a whopper. 18.8% compared to 8.4%, 5.6%. Equity is expensive money. So think about it this way. When you earn profit, free cash flow, that money you're earning is valuable. It is precious. You don't want to blow that on stupid stuff. Throwing that away as dividends, you're throwing away expensive money. So think twice before you get too generous with your dividends, especially early on. Okay, now, to do the next one, it's just a mod. The cost of new equity is actually going to be the same, except that you're not paying, you don't get, if you sold the stock, you wouldn't get $40. You would get $40 times 1 minus the flotation rate because you've got to give the brokers their cut. That makes it more expensive because you're not getting all 40 bucks. You're getting a new owner, you're just not getting all 40 bucks. It's sort of like someday, madam, you will be married. Imagine that. You are expecting to have this nice guy you met online, and you've actually talked to him a couple of times in Hangout chat rooms. So he's obviously a cool guy. And then when you go to the marriage ceremony, he comes up to say, I do, and you realize he doesn't have any leg. Okay, that sucks. You were expecting, you know, like a whole guy, and one of his hind legs is off, and he's real vague about how it happened, keeps talking about, you know, a chainsaw and a drunk spree in Mexico. Then he mentions, well, he's got a kidney missing, and then there's some of his colon is gone. It's hot sauce in Mexico. So, you know, you're kind of like getting cheated. You know, you were expecting a whole guy, and so he's going to be more expensive now than you thought because, you know, you got to buy him a wooden leg, and, you know, he's going to pee more often because he's got a kidney gone, all that, okay? I don't know where the hell you get these analogies. It's weird stuff, you know? Okay. So plus G. So now if we work that out, we'll do the same thing on top, 4 times 1 plus 0.08. Over 40 times, what was the flotation percentage? So you got 1 minus 0.06 on the 40, plus your 0.08. Now, you really have to be careful on this one, because you're going to have to use double parentheses. If you pump the whole thing in one keystroke sequence, you're going to have to use double parentheses in that denominator. Yeah?
What is the bottom part of that?
That's P0 times the quantity 1 minus capital F. Capital F is the float, the broker float. How much the percentage of every share you sell that the broker is going to keep. And so make sure that you get the same number I get, 4 times 1.08 divided by, and then I'm going to put double parentheses on the bottom. Open 2 parentheses, and I'm going to say 40 times 1 minus 0.06, close parentheses, plus 0.08. Bullcrap. Why did that? Let me try that again. 4 times 1.08. Okay, divided by 40 times 1 minus 0.06, close parentheses, plus 0.08, I get 19.49%. Is that what you get? So you notice that new equity is more expensive than existing equity. And it's just because you didn't get all the money for selling the stock. You've got new owners. You've got a new husband. He doesn't have a hind leg. Okay? So he's more expensive. Now, well, that was kind of okay. Just make sure that you walk through these. These are crucial. Because what we're going to do is from these we can work out our weighted average costs of capital. Essentially, how much the different tiers as we spend more and more money, what the cost does in terms of walking upward. But before we do that, we have to make a pit stop. We have to find what are called breakpoints. This tells us when we are going to be jumping from one cost of capital to another. And we call them breakpoints. I want you to think about this, and I'm going to do a sidebar here. See, if I spend up to $500,000, can you see it? What happened? Is this thing possessed? no signal my ass. I pressed it with my, Zoom it?
Well, that made me almost hurl.
Okay. Okay. Look. That $500,000, I can go to the bank for it. Well, that, if my optimal capital structure is 40% debt, what that tells me is that when I'm spending my money in my first tier of cost, I'm going through money, whatever I spend, 40% of that amount would be in the first tier of debt. I can go up to $500,000, and that would be 40% of my project costs. Let me say it again to you. I've got the bank on the hook to give me cheap, to lend me cheap money up to $500,000. Well, I know that my debt is 40% of every dollar I spend, so I know the $500,000 would buy me 40% of my project costs on the first tier. So in order to find, see that X? I always wondered, find X. Why? Is it lost? You know, we don't call it X, we call it the break point. No, I want you to struggle. There. Yeah, that's why I shouldn't have zoomed it that much. There. I really need to trim my nails, you know. I mean, I don't use polish anymore. You know, but okay, anyway. That's our break point. I know that after I've spent that much money, I have to start paying more for debt. So in other words, I'm not really talking about X's like in math. I'm talking about a real life thing that $500,000 is going to be 40% of my first break point, the first jump in the cost of capital. So my first break point is going to be total capital expenditures of $500,000 over 0.40. I know that my first jump in cost of capital, when I've blown through a total of $500,000 over 0.40. So grinding it out, $500,000 divided by 0.40. Oh, okay, great. $500,000, that tells me that the first place where money starts to get expensive is when I have had total capital expenditures on new projects of $1,250,000. That is breakpoint one. The next place where money would get even worse is when I've run through my money that I earned in the company. That'll be breakpoint two, but you've got to watch it here. How much money does the company have to spend on new projects that it has earned through sales and all that? How much was it? What did it say? Oh, you cheated. That's right. See, because the company earned $1.6 million. But it went and handed out $200,000 as dividends. So it has this much internally generated equity that it can blow before it has to sell more stock. So the bottom line there is that my second breakpoint is going to be when $1,400,000 is 60% of my breakpoint on the second round. So do it in two steps. Breakpoint one, you're borrowing cap divided by the debt and capital structure. Breakpoint two, equity, your net income after dividends divided by the equity percent in capital structure. Again, breakpoint one, your debt cap before it jumps at the jump divided by the debt percentage in capital structure. Breakpoint two is your net income after dividends divided by your equity percentage in capital structure. Just remember it like that, and you can get the two breakpoints. So, here we go. You work that grinder out. $1,400,000 over 0.60 is breakpoint two. Divided by 0.6. And you find out that your second breakpoint, this would be the one where you'd have to start, if you go this much with spending capital on new projects, you'd have to sell new common stock. We'd be at $2,333,333. And for God's sake, don't put period 0.333333. Don't trifle with me. Okay. So we keep this in mind. We're going to just start spending money on projects here. So I'm going to write these two down. I'm going to have my first breakpoint is $1,250,000. My second breakpoint is at $2,333,333. Now you're saying, well, why is there a third breakpoint there? Well, I used to do these problems so I could bluff you. If they had preferred stock that they could use before they started selling common stock or something like that, you'd have a third breakpoint. Or if the loan company had had another tier, like above $3 million, you go to 18%, then you'd have this third breakpoint. Okay? What is this? You know what? Oh, it's not that. It's this. I keep pushing that stupid button. I'm going to bring this wider a little bit. Okay, here we go. Yeah, if I had, most of the time, the usual one is if you had a third jump, had another jump there. You'd have another breakpoint here that you'd have to consider. Fortunately, we're not going to do that. Okay, now, we've got all this done. This is just legwork. And once you do, I'm going through this in detail. This should take maybe about 5 minutes, 10 minutes to do. It's just basic formulas. Do the formula, okay? Now we're going to flip it over, and we're going to do our weighted average cost of capital. Now, I'm going to write you a formula here, okay? The weighted average cost of capital. Really? There we go. This is what we used to do. Then you freeze it and scares the hell out of the next person who comes in. Okay, the weighted average cost of capital is the weight of debt in the capital structure times the cost of debt plus the weight of equity in the capital structure times the cost of equity. Write that down. That's a great tattoo for the ass, you know? Now, how we use it. It's actually really simple. The first weighted average cost, the first, and these actually are marginal costs of capital. And don't ask me why, but I always ask this as a multiple choice question on the exam. Just know it. The weighted average cost of capital is the first tier of the marginal cost of capital, which would be the weight of debt in the capital structure times the after-tax cost of debt level one plus the weight of equity in the capital structure times the cost of existing common stock. You want me to blow that up? There's your damn formula. You follow it? And it's just like monkey see, monkey do. And then I'm going to write the other ones down. Don't sweat if the formulas look a little bit weird. Once you get the hang of it, and then your second marginal cost of capital is the weight of debt times your cost when you have to go to more expensive debt plus your weight of equity while you're still burning up your net income after dividends.
Shouldn't that be DQ?
I'm just testing your ass. See, that's good that you caught that. I was seeing, wanting to see if anyone would notice that that's good. Okay, hell with it. You know what? It's almost cheeseburger time. The marginal cost of capital three is just the weight of debt times the cost of expensive debt, and then we're weight of equity times that cost of that expensive equity. So basically, write these down. These are great to put up on your refrigerator. It blows away people. They think you're really intelligent. Watch how I do this. And this is the way it'll be every time. Follow with me. 40% of that plus 60% of that. Second one is 40% of that times plus 60% of that. And then the last one is 40% of that plus 60% of that. Essentially, 40, 60. Okay, we've blown. Now we've got to go expensive debt. 40, 60. Okay, now we've got to go expensive equity too. 40, 60. So it's 40, 60, 40, 60, 40, 60. You just walk it like a ladder. Because at first, cheap debt, cheap equity. Expensive debt, cheap equity. Then finally, at the end, expensive debt, expensive equity. So in operating terms, these three would be, if I can fit this on the screen like this, weight of debt, 40% times cheap debt, which was 5.6%, plus the weight of equity, 0.60 times the cost of cheap equity, 18.8%. And then if I want to walk down the line here and just do the other ones, on the second run, 40% times more expensive debt, what was that, 8.4%, plus the weight of equity, 0.60, times we're still using cheap equity, 18.8%. And then finally, the last one, we've got 40% expensive debt, 8.4% debt, plus 60% times expensive equity, 19.49%. Make sure you know how to do this. This is probably the only, this is really kind of like the only really complicated part. You just put together. And if you work these out, you'll know you're on the right track because you'll see that your marginal cost of capital is getting worse and worse. As you use more and more, it's sort of like that law of increasing marginal costs. It is that law. As you spend more money, the last dollar is going to cost you more than the first dollar, or the dollar before it even. So I'm going to walk through these. 0.4 times 5.6 plus 0.6 times 18.8 equals. So your first one is going to be 13.52%. Oops, I'm going to have to back this out just a little bit. A little more. One more. Okay. Walk your next one. 0.4 times 8.4 plus 0.6 times 18.8. So now your weighted average cost of capital has gone up to 14.64%. Because we're using more expensive debt. We're still using the cheaper equity, the stuff that we generated internally. But now at the end, if we are going way out spending a lot of money on new capital projects, we're going to be using expensive debt, the 8.4% stuff, and expensive equity, the stuff where we sold through a broker who collected his fee, 19.49%. So we're going to find 0.4 times 18.8. I'm sorry, 8.4 times 8.4, geez. 8.4 plus 0.6 times 19.49. And so we have popped up to 15.05%. And so you see the progression. It's like a ladder. It stays cheap for a while because we're using cheap debt, cheap equity. And then it gets a little more expensive because we're using expensive debt, but we're still using cheaper equity. But finally, if we have to spend a lot of money on new capital projects, we're going to be using expensive 8.4% debt and expensive 19.49% equity. And so we've got the 15.05% as our last. But as long as the projects are going to pull more in than they cost, we're going to go with them. And that's where the next thing comes in. Okay. Thinking here, who I should ask about it. I'm going to have to do this with you, okay. Okay, I'm going to give you a list of three girls that you're going to have to decide. You're going to go out with each of them. You have to choose which one first, which one second, which one third, as long as you have money for them. Okay, so the list includes Rihanna. Well, actually, that's not a good idea. If you open the bedroom and Rihanna's waiting for you, you'd combust. Okay, so, okay, Rihanna. And then the next one on the list is Kristen Stewart. She never smiles, and she certainly wouldn't for you. And then there's this girl named Dorothy. She works at the local truck stop. Works. Okay, which one's the first one? How are you going to choose them?
Is there a fourth option?
No, no. You get to have all three of them as dates, but you have to choose in which order. And you'll keep having the... You can have the second date if you still have money from the first one. You can have the third date if you still have money from the second. So who will you have first?
I have
no idea. Oh, you'll have Rihanna because you want to burst into flames. It'll take him 3 days to get the ash smile off the carpet. You see, we pick from the best and then the next best and then the next best. In business, we do the same thing. We always go with the best project first. If there's money left, we go with the next best. If there's money left, we go with the next best. So when I create an investment opportunity schedule, we always reorder the investments by return on the investment. So if I flip this thing over and look at these projects, I would say, okay, and I will label them briefly. A is West Haven, B is Warsaw, C is Belgrade, and D is Oslo. And then I say, all right, which one is the best of these? Which one is the one we would do first? Talk to me. You see anyone that looks better than the other ones? This isn't the golf. Yeah. Huh?
A.
How about Oslo? 15%. Sure, they're Norwegians, but we can live with moose meat. Okay? So Project D in our this is temporary. The initial investment on Oslo was $1.5 million. And the return on it is 15%. Now, the second best, looking at them, was A, West Haven. And West Haven costs us $600,000. And gets us 12%. Now I look back over and I say, okay, Warsaw comes up next. That's B. Warsaw costs what, a million? Yeah. Warsaw costs a million. So that one comes in at 10%. And then if we're still spending money and we're still having fun, we can go with Project C, which was the Belgrade office. And Belgrade was at 800,000. And that pulled in 8%. Now, here's where it's funny, it was only a couple of years ago. I saw an actual version of this graph that I'm going to show you how to do here. Do not freehand the lines, because if you freehand the lines, you could get the wrong answer. You have to use a straight edge. And if I have you do it on an exam and you haven't used a straight edge, I will have a cow right in front of you, and you don't want to see me give birth to a cow because it's ugly. And you will get a wrong answer. I'll set it up so that if you're sloppy, you'll get a wrong answer. If you're sloppy with what I'm going to do here. Okay, here we go. Let me widen this out. You'll have to have it wide here. Okay. So the first thing we're going to have to do here is we're going to need a scale. And I've set up some tick marks here. If I were to look at the total, if we did all four of the projects that were possible, that's 1.5 and 6. 0.6, that's 2.1 million, another million, 3.1 million. So it's less than 4 million. So I've got to set up my scale on my axis here that will cover up to $4 million. Probably in this case, I would go with $500,000 increments. And there's kind of an art to this. We used to teach it in math. I used to be a math teacher, deciding on your scale, your axes, and all that. I'm guessing that'll cover us. You don't want to make it too tight, because then you won't be able to see numbers, and if you make it too wide, you'll overrun your scale. So there's kind of a balancing act in there, and you can screw it up. I usually use a pencil for these if I'm just starting to do one for the first time. That's step one. Now, on this cost of capital axis, we've got to go through all the possible returns and these. So what I would say is, oh, probably about 1% per tick mark would be okay. 2, 3, 4, 5%. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10%. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15%. 16, 17, 18, 19, 20%. It's funny because for a long time I thought, well, there's got to be a spreadsheet app that does these, you know, does the whole graph. There actually isn't. You build these by hand, and, you know, you can automate it, do your own macros in Excel and all that, but there's still, even to this day, if you're going to do it this way, and companies do, there's just kind of this hand graphing thing that's done unless you've got a CAD program. Okay, now the first thing you're going to do, once you've got these scales, step one, put in your breakpoints. Okay, they're going to be vertical lines, and you do them fairly lightly, and I always do them as dotted lines. My first breakpoint was at 1.25 million. Okay, that would be right there. Now, you've got to make sure that you put it in very cleanly. Vertical line. Like that. And that is breakpoint one. It's where your cost of capital jumps the first time. And then I'll put in breakpoint two, which is 2.3 million, which will be a little bit trickier. It's about there. And again, I do it as a dotted line, perfectly vertical. If you freehand any of this, you could get in real trouble because you need these to be as precise as possible. And there's breakpoint two. That's your first step, is making what we used to call, I don't think anyone calls them this anymore, we call them the breakpoint poles. Essentially, these are the risers on the marginal cost of capital. Once you've got the risers in, then you can do this. I'm going to zoom this out a little bit. I'm going to say, okay, you know what? My first cost of capital is 13.52%. There's 10, 11, 12, 13.52%. It's right there. Very carefully, I can put in the first step in the MCC graph. The marginal cost of capital graph is what I'm building now. 13.52% is how much I will pay for money from zero to $1.25 million in project cost. Again, the 13.52% is how much I'm going to pay for zero to $1.25 million in project costs. And then 14.64%, right there, is how much I will pay for money from $1.25 million on up to $2.33 million. So that's the second step on the stair, on the ladder of marginal cost of capital. You know what? And finally, if I spend more than $2.33 million, that's that money at 15.05%. So that is the final step on the riser, on the stair ladder. Really? How you doing? You see it? Y'all good? If we're happy, we know it. Okay. Notice, okay. I don't know. Somewhere in your dark past in high school algebra or maybe here in algebra or calculus, you learned about something called a stepwise function. Do you remember those things where you had these functions that looked like stair steps? This is where we use them. Finance has many cases, many examples where you have a level cost and then it pops, got another level cost and then it pops. These are stepwise functions. The ones that we do in math that most math teachers don't know exactly where you would apply it in the real world. Well, we see these quite a bit in finance. Costs that stay at a certain level and then all of a sudden pop, another cost. Your cost of being alive, everything's cool. Then you go to college, pop. Then you get married, pop. Then you have kids, oh yeah. And then you get old, and oh God, the cost. See, we see these jumps. So this thing that I just showed you here, this is what is called the MCC graph, the marginal cost of capital graph. Now, we are going to overlay on that the investment opportunity schedule, the IOS graph. And that will tell us what projects we take. Because our first project is going to cost us $1.5 million. And I'm going to get 15%. So you see that? Oh, did I just have a small stroke? What the hell? There. Now don't do that again, okay? See that 15% on that? I got to run $1.5 million. So I'm going to run $1.5 million. That would be right to there. Okay, $1.5 million would be to there. Now that one is going to run me, Project A, going out to $1.5 million, 15, I'm going to get 15%. That's Project A. Should I accept Project A? Is what I get out of it above what I pay for the last dollar of it? Look at the graph and talk to me. Should I take Project A again? Or I'm sorry, that's Project D. D as in duh. Yeah. Okay, now let me try that again. Is the last dollar I spend on Project D less than the return on Project D? What do you see? Here's the return on Project D, that line right there. Does the last dollar I spend on Project D justify taking Project D? Look. Is Project D's return above the cost of the last dollar? Well, spank me, yes it is. I accept Project D. So D is a go. Now let's go to the next one. A turns us 12%. So there's 12% down here, and I'm going to have to go. I've spent $1.5 million, so from here, I've got to spend $6 million more. And I'm going to get 12% out of it. And I'm going to spend $600,000 more. So that'll take me out to $2.1 million right about there.
right about there. That's Project A. Now I want you to talk to me. Is the return on Project A worth the money that I will borrow and I'll use for it? I see some heads shaking. Is that, do you see it? Project A is a no-go. Because Project A doesn't return as much as what it costs. So that means that Project A is a no-go, and because the other projects are even worse, they're no-goes. That's right. That's why you have to do the line so precisely. Sometimes a project will start above its cost, but it will cross somewhere and it'll be below its cost by the time you're finished with it. If I wanted to put in the other ones, by the way, $1 million on Project B, which turns 10%, so that would be $1 million more, so that would take me out to $3.1 million right out there. If I want to put in the rest of the IOS, that's Project B, and then Project C, which returns 8%, that costs another $800,000, so that takes us out to None of those projects are a go. So what do you answer when I say, which project should be accepted? You don't say Project D. You go back over and you say, we should build the Oslo countervailing force bunker. That's how you answer me, and that's all I have for you. I thank you.